Welcome to Rewatchable episode 179. We are back to talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, season 4, episode 12, A New Man, and Angel, season 1, episode 12. Expecting a little bit of everything today. That's gonna be a fun couple of discussions. My name is Selena, and I'm here with Ariana and Kristen and Caitlin. Hi, guys.
Hello. Hello.
I forgot to say who's a newbie and who's not, so just so everyone knows, me and Caitlin are super fans, and Ariana and Brittany, oh my god, and Kristen are watching for the first time. Brittany's also, but she's not here. And we are, of course, from Hypeable.com. If you want to get in contact with us about this episode of Rewatchable or anything else, as long as you keep it spoiler-free, there are plenty of ways to do it. You can email us, rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at @re_watchable. You can find this post on hypeable.com. And you can find us on Tumblr, which is rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And to kick off the show today, as always, we want to share some fun facts. And Caitlin, why don't you go first? And I don't know what you're going to talk about, but I really want to hear about all your cool new furniture.
Oh, yeah. That was my fun fact last week that I had moved.
It's so fun. I think it can, like, extend.
It's double fun. Yeah.
Yeah, I still have stuff out on order. Like, pretty much all my furniture has come. Now I'm just waiting for a few more pieces of art to come to tie everything together. But I really love how everything's coming together. It's fun. And today, my fun fact is that after this, I'm going to go look for a puppy.
Oh, my God.
Yay!
Are you really?
I am.
That's amazing.
I've been wanting to get one, and it's National Adoption Weekend at PetSmart, so I'm going to go see it.
Oh, my gosh. Well, then you're going to have to, like, extend your fun fact again, so we can hear all about the puppy.
If I get one, that is. Aww. We'll see what's there, but I've been wanting to get a puppy to keep me company in the apartment.
That's amazing. I feel like we can just quit now because nothing is going to be as fun as that. Is anyone else getting a puppy? Kitten? Anything? Birds?
No. I know Karen wishes I was getting a puppy or kitten. She wants one very badly. I guess I can go next, though. Hi, this is Kristen. Hi. Yeah. I am going to see the Detroit Lions play tomorrow, and I'm very, very excited about this. My brothers and my dad and I will be trekking very early in the morning to Detroit tomorrow morning to watch the Lions play. They play at 1, and we always get there super early and have breakfast and then go and watch warm-ups and get really close to the field, and then we go sit in our nosebleed section seats and watch the game. It's always a good time. We try and do it, like, once a year, and, tomorrow's the Detroit home opener, so I'm very excited about this.
Oh, cool. And what about you, Ariana?
Question, Kristen. So, do you watch Dancing with the Stars?
I have, yes.
Oh, well, not this year. I think that there's a player from the Lions on there. So
there is, Calvin Johnson.
Yes, he was really good. He was very good.
He retired over the summer. And won't be back, but he's one of our, like, most famous players. He's a fantastic wide receiver, and we miss him very much.
Mm-hmm. And he played for Georgia Tech, which is the college that I root for.
Yes, he did.
Cool. Yep. I usually do not care about football at all, but see, we were able to tie it into my 80-year-old sensibilities of Dancing with the Stars. My fun fact is that I recently watched the show Underground. Has anybody watched
it? Oh, cool. Yeah, I saw the pilot for that.
Oh, my God.
I never saw the rest.
Amazing.
But it was really good.
And it ties into Buffy because Riley is in it. He's a main character.
Yes!
And if you watch Underground, it'll make you like Riley a ton of times more. I mean, I like Riley.
Agreed.
But it'll make you like him even more because he's an abolitionist. And he's really, really cool.
And he's a rougher, older Riley. It's very cool.
Yes.
It's a very good show. It's one of those, like, you know, you start watching it and you're like, I wish I had just hours to watch it all. And
yes.
I'm, like, sort of waiting to get around to it. It's very good. That's awesome. Do I have a fun fact? Not really. I guess I got to go to the gala premiere of Bridget Jones's baby here in Copenhagen, which was a lot of fun. And like I saw it sort of very early compared to like the rest of Denmark, at least. And there were no stars except for like Danish reality stars. And I'd actually been sent there to cover it. And I could not recognize anybody. Like, if people were walking up to the red carpet, people were like, look over here, look over here. And I was like, who the heck? Like, nobody. So I brought my brother because he's like a little bit more familiar with it, but he was like totally useless. Like, the only sort of major star that went, I went to the bathroom and I was like, just keep an eye. And he was like, yeah, yeah, this girl like came and took pictures and left. And I was like, did you get a picture? And he was like, no. So that was a bust. but the movie was very good, at least. I thought it was very cute. I'm weirdly like, I have a weird affection for those movies. Except for one issue I have with it, which I wrote a post about in Hypable. But other than that, that was fun. And yeah, that's it. That's all I got. So let's talk about Buffy. Start with episode 412, A New Man, which is actually, I really love this episode. It's very Giles-centric.
This week,
so. Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. I absolutely cannot stand the Angel one. we'll get to that. But this one, very, very good. I'm almost sad that that Brittany is not here to talk about Giles, but I think we're all Giles fans, so I'm sure it'll be okay. I don't think you can not be a Giles fan, to be honest. So to start us off with a synopsis from Mitch, which reads, in this episode, our old pal Ethan turns Ripper into a Fjarl demon. When Giles is feeling both out of touch and the loop, he gets drunk with Ethan and wakes up with more than just a hangover. Spike is able to understand Fjarl Giles, leading the two on a rascally adventure to get Giles cured. Buffy and Riley fight through their sexual tension while tracking down where Giles was stolen off to. The two catch up with Giles at Ethan's hotel room and, after a brief scuffle, force Ethan to change Riley back. Epilogue. Walsh tells Riley to watch out for Buffy's spontaneity. The professor then enters a mysterious room 314. Dun, dun, dun. And that's it. That's the episode. Very exciting. So you liked it, Ariana.
I did.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
What about Caitlin and Kristen? Did you guys like this one?
Yeah, it was rather entertaining to see poor Giles as the creepy demon guy. I enjoyed it. It was funny and silly and ridiculous and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm. I think I have more admiration for this episode as I've gotten older because I relate to Giles so
much more. The show is sort of very committed to Giles and to continuing to tell his story even when he doesn't have a, like, it would be very easy to write him off in a way, or to kind of like let him hover in this like unsure state, but it's sort of it keeps sort of letting us experience what he's experiencing and sort of asking, like, how is he going to fit into this narrative now that he's not her watcher and he's not a librarian and they have to come to him and they are doing all these new different things that he's not a part of. And both Giles and Xander sort of experience that. And I think that's a very interesting line of, like, exploration for the show, for Giles. So I really appreciate that in this episode for doing that. So Buffy, it's also Buffy's birthday, which is sort of something that it's easy to forget when you're sort of rewatching the show, because it is, like, as Mitch noted, the best and most calm birthday of all time. It is literally just a party. And, like, what the bad thing that happens to Giles. So that was kind of fun. For
well,
once.
But imagine if she had killed him. Then it would have been like the worst that birthday.
Yeah, I know. I think that's such an interesting way to resolve it, though, too, because she actually does, like, kill him before she recognizes him. But then the save is that it's fake silver. I think that's actually very funny. But yeah, it could have gone really bad. So this is a really interesting scene that I thought we could talk about a little bit, which is the one, like, after Giles goes to the party and has a terrible time because he sort of, through the very unsubtle remarks by Anya and sort of the general ambiance, he realizes that he is just not really in the loop, and Buffy is sort of caught up in this college thing and she's really into Professor Walsh and all of that. So Giles actually goes to confront Walsh and she just sort of barrels over him completely, and she pushes all of his buttons. And one of the things she says is that, oh, I don't think that, like, because he's like, oh, we should leave her, like, to do things on her own. And he's, like, really sort of wanting her to be independent. And Walt's just like, no, actually, I think it looks like she lacks a strong father figure, which is obviously Walsh is trying to push his buttons. She can sort of, she reads the situation very clearly and she plays to that. But what do you guys think? Do you think there's anything to that? What she's saying?
Do you think she could tell? Because I was like super confused in that scene because she was being really rude, but also Giles coming in like that. So if most young, beautiful teenage girls, like in college girls, show up mm-hmm. and you talk to them, and then this librarian from their school comes up and he's like, you know, we have a very close bond, you know. Mm-hmm. I like, as if I was Professor Walsh, I would be like, wow, okay, creepy dude, like, please leave the teenager alone.
Right.
Because he wasn't being, like, very direct, you know. He was just like, oh my gosh, she's so special. Instead of being like, you know, I try to watch out for her because she, you know, needs a little looking out for.
Well, the only reason I think that she was is because I think she sort of, I mean, she's set up as this person. She reads the situation very quickly and she's, you know, the psych professor. And I think, you know, the minute that he sort of stepped up and offered a challenge, I think she was just like, well, I'm going to take this guy down and hit him where it hurts. And I think she sort of immediately read the situation like that. Maybe I'm giving her too much credit.
I always read her as very dismissive of him in the scene. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you're her librarian. You, like, not recognizing there being a genuine relationship there. Because she's so, like, whatever, this is what I see, moving on. Like, I don't really, mm-hmm. I never read her as actually, like, trying to cut him down in that scene.
Maybe not. Maybe that is sort of, I always did, but I don't know. Maybe she didn't. Maybe she literally just, like, dismissed him as a, like, weird, over-clingy librarian. But, like,
because it's so strange to be, yes, like, oh yeah, I'm her high school librarian. Like,
I would seriously, like, call the cops, be like, Buffy, you need to watch out. Your librarian is, like, skulking around here. Because he wasn't very clear. Yeah. There was a much better way for him to, like, not be creepy.
Well, he could have just said, like, I'm a friend of her mother's, or mm-hmm. like, I'm a close friend of the family. Like, he could have said anything, and he went with I'm her librarian.
He could have just said the truth, like, she came in and she didn't know anybody and I started watching out for her. I mean, sometimes teachers do that for, like, vulnerable kids mm-hmm. in a not creepy way.
And that's why I just maybe just assume that that's what Walsh read from him and his behavior, and that's why she kind of, but who knows? I don't know. We have to, like, put it on a list of unanswered questions. Maybe the listeners have some insight. But it does lead to the same conclusion, which is that Giles is just left feeling totally irrelevant, and it doesn't help when he finds out that Buffy is, like, that Riley is part of the initiative and that Buffy knows it, and Willow and Xander and Anya and Spike all know about it, but he does not.
And Spike?
Oh my gosh.
And I just love that. Like, I love how that came together, that Spike actually knows, but Giles does not in this scenario.
Oh my,
like,
gosh, that was so wonderful.
Yeah.
As, you know, I do have to say, though, as bad as I felt for Giles in this episode, it's kind of his own fault, because she was trying to include him a lot at the beginning, and he was mm-hmm. always like, you know, you have to do things on your own. You have to do things on your own. So she did. And now he's like, oh, never mind.
Yeah, you're right. Exactly. Yeah. Like, he feels irrelevant. He can't, you know, he can't leave. He doesn't have any place. He's kind of like Spike in a way. Like, he's sort of stuck in Sunnydale without anything to do. So are you going to say something, Kristen?
Yeah, that episode, you know, toward the beginning of season 4, when I was like, I felt bad for Buffy because everybody just kept sending her away, and Giles, like, she comes to visit and he, like, just basically dismisses her. And it's like, mm-hmm. yeah, and now all of a sudden it's, I want to be involved. Why don't I know what's going on in your life? And it's like, well, you sent me packing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he wants her to go out and do things on her own, but he kind of wants her to come and tell him about it after. I think that's kind of what it
exactly,
is.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, he doesn't want to be her dad, but he does want to be her dad. Like, I think that's sort of at the end of the day, what is the situation here?
I mean, they're using his apartment as a gathering place, so they're sort of, like, taking his existence for granted. Like, you know, like, if they are going to come to his place and just walk in and out without ever knocking or anything, like, he's probably like, well, if you're going to come and use my place as the nerve center, like, I deserve to know what's going on.
The nerd center?
Nerve center.
Oh. I was like, when did they become the nerd center? Like, demon slayer nerds. No, I agree, though. I think that's what it is. He's in it. He's in the fight, but he's not in the loop, so to speak. But so one of the things that happens, sort of speaking of Professor Walsh, is that Buffy comes to have a meeting with Walsh and Riley, which is like part of my favorite sort of quote-unquote scene of this episode, because Buffy is so superior in the best way. And they, you know, Mitch sort of says she likely has ulterior motives for the Slayer's powers, which I don't know. I mean, newbies, you guys can discuss this. I read that totally differently because she didn't even know she was a Slayer at first.
Mitch can predict the future. So yeah. He knows that now she will have ulterior motives for the Slayer's powers.
Yeah. I don't know. I definitely do think one thing I loved about this scene and a lot of this stuff in general is that the Initiative may be like this big organization of big, strong dudes. Like, I don't think I've seen a single like female Initiative soldier, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I have. But here comes Buffy, who is so much better than them, and they are like so disbelieving of that. And I think I love, like, time and time again in this episode, she just owns them. Like, Riley has killed 17. I think that's so great.
I love how, like, that was supposed to be impressive, and yes. Then it's like, yeah, sorry, buddy. I killed 17, like, last week.
And I love that for the audience, too. Like, the audience is laughing also, because they're like, oh, you're such a loser. Like, you've only killed 17. We've seen Buffy kill, like, 17 a day.
Exactly. Yeah, but and that's the thing. And Buffy has that face, like, she's killed 17, and you sort of, you have the sense that maybe Riley and Maggie would read it like, you know, she's looking embarrassed. Oh, I haven't killed that many. And in fact, and we never find out how many, like the number she gave him. And that's like one of the things I've always wondered watching the show. I'm like, I wonder how many demons she's killed, like roughly at this point. Like, are we talking 1,000 or like 5,000? Like, how many? I want to know.
We should have been keeping a count.
We should, yes.
Keeping a vampire/demon head count.
Yes, but that's also, like, all the demons she's slaying when the camera is not rolling, you know? In her real life, that's happening right now. but, yeah, no, I thought that was interesting. And then another part of this episode's story is Willow and Tara, who try to do a rose petal spell, but they are interrupted by a dark power. So we're sort of returning to Willow and Tara. You know, Willow finally has someone to do magic with, and she wants to do the rose spell, and it's all very nice, and it goes very well. But then it's like, boom, 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 and like, possibly this is Ethan's magic? Possibly it's something else? Do you guys have any thoughts?
My first instinct was Ethan. Just, you know, like, everything that was going on with Ethan and Giles was basically happening at the same time. And if Ethan was, you know, doing some sort of magic to get this demon latched onto Giles, then it makes total sense that it would have possibly been picked up by Rose, or by, Rose and Willow, or Tara and Willow. So, yeah, I don't know. There's a possibility that it could be someone else, but I really thought it was Ethan.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. Or I thought so. I think so, too. Yeah. And Ethan is obviously, like, he's the one who slams his way back into town and makes all of this stuff happen. And it's interesting. Like, first of all, it's interesting that he's trying to do this big evil plan, and then the reason that it doesn't work is because Giles comes back in the room and he's like, oh, bugger, I thought you'd gone. I love when stuff like this happens. Exactly. And that's one of the things I think like a show like Buffy does really well. It's like it sets you up for this big dramatic thing and then it's like, nope. Yeah, and Angel does it a lot too, which is amazing. But then like once he's there and once he's sort of been caught by Giles, he sort of uses information as a bargaining tool, like Ethan is want to do. And he says he like there's a world imbalance in this ominous room 314, which we obviously see at the end, and we're gonna maybe share a few theories about what we think that is at the end. But they have this really cool bar scene that I don't think is anyone's favorite, but it's a very good scene. Like I think a lot of what happens, like just seeing the two of them interact, I really enjoy it. I think they have really good like enemy chemistry, if that makes sense. Like you believe that they've been friends. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's there's so much history there and you can feel the history between them.
Yeah, exactly. And I like when he was like, I just find you really attractive. And Giles is like, what? And everything to do with the joke about him poisoning his drink. And then he just starts laughing. I thought that was really funny, especially because he did, in the end, obviously, do something to him. And then Giles wakes. Please, like, interrupt me if I'm going too fast. But Giles wakes up and he's a feral demon. And he has some kind of really sort of, they're funny, but they're also kind of scary scenes when he basically wreaks havoc and scares everybody. And I think it's very interesting because, like, again, like with In Something Blue, when he lost his vision and the entire episode was kind of played for comedy, but there was like a darker sort of more sad element to it, you know, because it is a really scary thing that's happening.
I don't know why I was scared for him, because I don't think he's gonna die. I mean, at least not yet. We have to wait for like a season finale. But it was like scary at times, like when I think that the first time was when Xander doesn't like can't realize that it's Giles. I was like, oh shoot, how's he gonna get out of this one?
Right.
Letting us meet Fjarl Demon Giles and like hear him and understand him and then have him walk into a room with Xander and realize he's speaking another language was probably the weirdest part of this whole episode for me. Like, we're supposed to just assume we can understand him, everybody can understand him, it'll be fine. Like, he'll talk to them, he'll say, I'm Giles, don't kill me, and it'll be fine. And then, you know, he ends up in front of Xander and it's just, you know, growling.
Yeah.
Like, That was definitely the most jarring part of the episode, just because, you know, you didn't see it coming, and then all of a sudden, boom, the only person who can understand him is Spike, and now they have to be buddies. Like, that's yes. Terrifying.
That's the spinoff we want.
Yeah. I think something that works in favor of being afraid for Giles in this episode is that Doyle died, like, two episodes ago on Angel, mm-hmm. which was just, like, out of the middle of nowhere, not in a mid-season or season finale, just like random episode of the week, they kill off a character who's in the like opening credits, so like yeah. All of a sudden that's in the back of your mind. Everything if you're watching both of them. Mm-hmm, yeah,
for sure. I think that's like a really good point. Like everything does feel a little bit less certain now at this point for everybody, even Giles. And I actually think it's interesting because in like when you really think about it, not that we need to talk about it too much, but it is a really scary thing to feel like if you imagine you feeling like yourself, but you are suddenly the enemy, you know, like he can't communicate, he can't protect himself, he's the walking, like they think he is the demon that potentially killed Giles, so their instinct is going to be to hurt and kill it. And it's him, and he can't do anything. Like, in that scene when he was, like, fighting Buffy, I really sort of... It is really scary, and it's weird because it is a funny episode, and he looks funny and all that stuff, but I think it's genuinely, like, a scary thing.
And for a character. He's losing himself as he mm-hmm. goes. Like, he's becoming less Giles and more the Fjarl demon, so... Mm-hmm.
So that is sort of like a dark turn to that episode. And I think, again, sort of Anthony Head is obviously, like, amazing. So he can just pull it off and he can show that darkness and that that ominous tone while still being hilarious and running into things and bantering with Spike. And again, it's such a cool thing about this season, I think, the way that they are weaving Spike into the story. Because again, like, he is here now, he's settling, he got himself a crypt. maybe or maybe not with Sandra's lamp decorating in the corner because Anya was trying to be nice. And Spike is there, and he is not like, he's not anti helping Giles as long as there's a price, because he has no reason not to. And again, it's one of the things I like about Spike and his sort of his way of sorting himself into the group. And those scenes with Spike and Giles were pretty amazing.
I love how he's always, I'm evil, and I'm going, are you really?
I love that the way that they've been able to bring him in this season and like basically mm-hmm. make him a part of the group by making him useless as a...
Yeah.
And because really the fun for in watching him, like the fun in watching Angelus is that he's so horrible, right? Mm-hmm. Like that he... Like, you never know what horrid thing he's going to do next. But the fun in watching Spike was never, like, he's bad. Like, I don't know, he never, like, felt like a bad guy, even when he was doing mm-hmm. bad things. Yeah. The fun thing was listening to him talk and banter and be ridiculous, which we still get to do. It reminds me, does anybody watch iZombie?
I did. No. Not anymore.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen a couple episodes, but not the whole thing.
I feel like that's what they're trying to do with David Anders' character. Because he was the bad guy, but then, like they said for the first season, he was so fun. They wanted to bring him in and to interact with the other characters more, but that's kind of hard to do when he's, like, your mortal enemy. Mm-hmm. So, at the end of the season, they, like, turned him into a not-zombie now, so, like, now he has to work on them.
Oh, interesting. So. Yeah, and I think, again, it's one of those things that sort of maybe takes its root in Buffy a little bit, because they're obviously doing the same thing with Damon on The Vampire Diaries, but... It's different, obviously, because it's a different kind of vampire. And I think that's true. And I think what is so great about the Spike thing is it defies expectation, because it's not at all how you would imagine him becoming part of the group. You know, like either you would imagine him somehow like now he's a good, like a legitimately good guy, like Angel style, or he's the antagonist. But this, like, it's just so weird. And it opens up for such interesting interactions, because they still hate each other, but they don't have a reason to kill each other, so they're like, okay, well, what are we gonna do now? And it is one of those things, like you said, like from the beginning, what has been interesting about Spike hasn't been that he's a really evil guy. It has been that he's like so much more than that. Like it doesn't mean that he's not still evil. And as Caitlin said, like, it's easy to forget that. And I think it's important that you don't forget that, because it's like, you know, he is evil and that's his character, but Spike is just really bad at being evil. I think that's kind of the bottom line, you know, like he's the worst evil person.
Makes me wonder, like, does he even really want to be evil? I kind of feel like he just wants to find a nice girl to settle down with. Like, yeah. Was he just being evil because Drew, like, found it such a turn on? Like,
well, I think that's the thing about, like it's obviously in his nature, like, as a vampire, you don't have a soul, you're not sort of compassionate, it's in your nature to kill and hurt people. But I think in that sense, like, he doesn't necessarily want to be unnecessarily, like, it's hard to explain, but it's kind of like, you know, he was all like, oh, well, I don't want the world to end because that would suck for me. And it's like, he doesn't actually care about anyone else. Like, he would have killed Willow when he had the chance, you know, because he, you know, whatever. But then he couldn't. And he was like, oh, well, whatever. Like, it's not like he has this big plan to kill Willow. Like, Angelus wanted to kill all of Buffy's friends to, like, make her feel this most amount of pain possible. And Spike really doesn't care about that. He just, as you said, he just kind of wants to settle down and, like, have a nice life. You know, like, it is very interesting, and he is definitely very, very different from Angelus in that way. But again, he is still evil. he's not like a good guy, but he's less concerned with doing evil things than just making his own life nice, I think, is the basic thing about Spike. There's a lot to talk about with Spike. I feel like we always end up in these conversations, but he is such a fascinating character. What? Where are we at? Giles offers Spike money to help, and Spike like is gonna decorate his new crypt, so he takes the money, and they sort of have a joyride through town. That is someone's favorite scene, so we'll save that. And then meanwhile, the Scoobies are sort of having a really terrible time because they think that Giles was either killed or taken by a demon. And Buffy sort of goes into the mode that she always goes into when she's sort of trying to protect herself from breaking down. She goes into full Slayer mode and she's like, well, you know, we don't know where Giles is. We don't know what happened to him. For now, I'm going to focus on the demon and I'm going to kill it. Which is worrying. And a hilarious car chase that ends with Spike wrecking Giles's car. Buffy and Riley sort of track Ethan down. They find Demon Giles, and a wonderful little scene when Buffy, like a little bit too late, but luckily that ended up okay. She realizes it's Giles because of his eyes, because no one can look that annoyed with her. Which I thought, actually, I thought that was a good way of making that moment not too cheesy, but I don't know if you guys agree, because it is like borderline a little bit cheesy, but I thought it was okay. Did you like that moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense because she hadn't been close enough to him yet to really, because I mean, he doesn't look like Giles except for the eyes, and she hadn't been close enough to him until she was literally on top of him killing him. So I think it makes sense.
Yeah, I just thought it was so nice. I'm so invested in the Buffy and Giles, like, father-daughter surrogate relationship. Like, I'm watching Gilmore Girls right now, and we're on season 5, and the Luke and Rory thing, I love it too, for like basically the same reasons. So I'm just very happy when we get little moments like that. I think that's very cute. And so and then that kind of leads us into the final scene, which is that, you know, after Buffy and Giles have their patching up scene, when, you know, she promises to tell him stuff and he sort of warns her a little bit off the initiative, we have a parallel scene with Riley and Professor Walsh, because obviously to get to Giles and to find the room, obviously Buffy, like Riley called in a few like initiative, not favors, but like he made the initiative do some things, and Buffy just kind of went ahead, and Riley tried to pull the, I'm not supposed to take you with me. And she was like, actually, you're going with me, and that's it.
And that was cool. I was like, Riley, who do you think you are? Like, she's like, definitely taking you with her.
Yeah. Yeah, like, this might be your little job, but she's the Slayer. This is her calling. Get out of her way. Mm-hmm. Like, what the hell?
You've only killed 17 demons.
You're such a yeah, like, take a seat, you know? Yeah.
But and she just kicked you across the room.
Exactly. And she was still holding back a little, which is just another excellent thing about, like, this. But and that's, like, one of the things that I sort of hate and love about the Riley and Buffy relationship is that I hate this sort of alpha male, like, setting that he has, and that is sort of his default, you know, like in that episode when he was like on the park bench and he was like, I'm staying out here because women can't walk around alone at night, or whatever else he said. Like, I hate that, but I love how Buffy is like changing his mind and legitimately, like, there is no way that he can maintain that attitude with her around. And in the end, he's like, you know, Not that she needs him to, like, his approval, whatever, blah, blah, but I like that he's sort of like, oh, actually, wow, you know?
To be fair to him, though, I don't think he was like, you can't come with me because you're not competent. I think he was like, you can't come with me.
It was like a military thing,
because I'm going to get in so much trouble.
Yeah.
I think that's what true. It was.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think it's more like the attitude of him sort of being so surprised that she is so strong and that she's so capable as she is. But I like how it resolves, and I like how they sort of come together at the end of this episode, and he's still like challenging her. He's still like, yeah, just give me a week, and she's like, yeah, right. And so Buffy sort of Walsh tells Riley actually to be careful of Buffy, because she doesn't, you know, she's rash and impulsive, and she doesn't she's not part of the initiative, and he needs to remember that. And then she leaves him and goes into room 314, which is obviously what Ethan had been warning Giles about. So what do we think she's up to in there?
Maybe she wants to become a vampire so she can live forever. Ooh.
That's interesting. That's a cool theory. I like that.
I don't know if I really have a theory. Clearly she's up to no good, but why would be the question. I mean, she could just be, you know, the mayor or the master and just wants to take over the world. It's not a bad... it's not a bad motivation.
I think it's a stupid motivation. I think Spike had it right. Like, when you've sent the world to hell, what the hell are you supposed to do yourself, you know?
Yeah.
What are you going to roll over?
Exactly, yeah. But so that sort of leaves us on a nice little note of cliffhanger when we're kind of like, I wonder what's going on with this initiative. And maybe we'll find out. Maybe we'll never find out. That would be sad, but who knows? Moving on to our favorite scenes of the episode, I guess that I will just go first because mine is kind of like the whole episode. I just love how superior Buffy is. Like, in general, I love how she's like, has killed so many more demons, and she's like, kicks Riley's ass, and she's taking charge, and she is a leader, because she is a leader. She is the only one to do her job, and she isn't gonna take orders, basically, and gonna fall in line, so to speak. And I think that's really cool, and it's one of my favorite parts about the show Buffy and the character of Buffy, other than, of course, her stupid puns that we are gonna get to in a bit. And Caitlin, what about you?
So mine was when Giles, as the feral demon, makes Spike stop so he can get out of the car and scare Professor
Wall. Yes!
So petty, yes. And I love it.
That is the second time she's been chased down the street by a supernatural creature, by the way.
By a supernatural creature who was friends with Buffy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's
true. Wow. Maybe their supernatural instincts know there's something up with her.
Maybe.
She's bad news for Buffy.
Yeah. What about you? Actually, Kristen, you have sort of a similar one.
Yes, just that whole sequence of Spike and Giles in the car. Like, them having to work together was hysterical. And Giles breaking the window and Spike making fun of him. And just the whole thing was really entertaining.
Yes.
I'm offering him more money to be the
diversion. Yeah.
Oh my god, yeah. And Ariana?
Mine was when Giles finds out that everyone else knows about Riley and the initiative except him. And, like, them trying to break it to him. They're like, no, nobody knows except Anya and Spike.
Yeah. That was amazing. And moving into favorite lines, I had, like, I thought someone was going to take the second one, so I didn't take it. But I had when Anya tries to give Spike Xander's lamp. And Spike ends up taking it anyway. And then Xander goes, that's my lamp. And Spike goes, and you're what? Shocked and disappointed? I'm evil. It's amazing. And it's so funny that, like, he is evil to the extent that he's going to steal someone's lamp. Like, I really appreciate that.
That's the exact level of evil of Spike.
Exactly. And then I actually did have a second one, which is one of the things that has stupidly made me laugh because I'm a child in watching Buffy is towards the end when Buffy to Giles is talking to her and she goes, uh-oh, you have butt face. And he like looks, his expression, that's actually my quote, is his expression afterwards because it looks amazing. And she's like, obviously, because he was going to say, but. And Kate, no, I want to say that one for last. Ariana, what is yours?
Mine is when Giles needs help from Spike, and he's like, I'll give you $100. And Spike goes, $100? You'll have to do a lot better than that. $200. Oh my god, I laughed out loud.
And then he's so surprised when Giles is like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, such high ambitions.
You fools.
And Kristen?
Mine was from the beginning of the episode. It comes from Riley, and he's like, I suddenly find myself needing to know the plural of apocalypse.
Yeah.
And that just, something about that, man. What is the plural of apocalypse? Should you need a plural for apocalypse? Apocalypti?
Yes.
Who knows? Oh,
that's funny. And that is kind of sums up the show as well, which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
And Caitlin, I wanted to save yours for last because this is possibly the best, like, Buffy quote of all time.
I made sure to get into the dock first so I could get this one. So it's when Buffy's having her meeting with Professor Walsh, and she's like, "The Slayer, we thought you were a myth." And Buffy says, "Well, you were mistaken."
I feel like stuff like that just like imprinted itself on my soul, and that's why I say such stupid things now. I love it. So funny. Such a like quintessential Buffy pun. And I think that's sort of, it's hilarious. That was a good one. Well done. You won that one, Caitlin, for sure. So we're moving on to now to Angel, which is also episode 12 of season 1. That was right. Expecting. I'm very curious to talk about this one. In my opinion, this is a terrible episode, but I will be really happy if other people like it.
Loved so it's it. Not.
It's so good. I cannot wait to hear why.
A terrible episode, but I just love the character development that went on mm-hmm. here.
That is definitely. Redeeming factor, like why it's not the worst, but it's still heard around. But I'll read the synopsis and then we can talk about it. In this episode, Cordy's ghost roomie has her back when a sleazy Vinny the con man impregnates her with surrogate demon spawn. Ready to birth 7 nasty little critters, Cordy is influenced by the demon baby daddy's giant powers. What? Anyway, to think that this is a good thing. Never fear, Angel is here. He freezes the giant hacksaw demon, and Cordy smashes it into a million pieces, freezing her and other pregnant victims. Sex is bad. Angel investigation agrees. Sex is bad. Tagline of the show. So, yeah, there we go. I mean, it's an interesting episode. And I think character development-wise, I mean, for this trio of characters, we can all agree, this is a very good episode. This is when they sort of really come together as a unit and learn to appreciate each other, Wesley included. And there's a lot of really cool scenes with that. The reason I don't like it is because I'm just, anytime you have this kind of demon pregnancy storyline, I really just hate it because I think it's like such a cheap way of telling this sort of, I don't want to say like male dominated narrative, but in a way that's what it is. The women vulnerable and you leave the men to save them. And I think it would have been a lot different if there had been another woman on the team, like say they had brought Kate back or something like that to help save them. I probably would have felt a little bit less icked out by it. And I think that's like one of the things that Angel season 1 really gets on my nerves about, is that they have so many episodes where it's women in trouble and Angel has to swoop. It's like the reverse of Buffy, and Buffy is in itself a reverse of the archetypical male hero that has to save the damsels in distress. And there's a lot of damsels in distress in Angel, and I don't like seeing Cordelia be one of them. So that's sort of my main issue with this episode. But everything character development wise, I agree with you, Ariana. I thought that was great.
I totally understand, because I find myself conflicted also, because I don't like her nature as being the most vulnerable person, like sort of like mm-hmm. how Xander is the most vulnerable mm-hmm. person. She's like the Zeppo here, except now she has superpowers, but like she has to be the one who gets, like for there to be actual stakes, it has to be a person you know, and so mm-hmm. it makes sense that Cordelia is the one always in trouble. I don't like it because it is a terrible trope. But what I do like about it is that by Cordelia's nature, because of who she is, she never feels like a victim to me.
She's not a victim. And you saw that in the last episode when she was like, "I'm fine, you know, like this is okay, I'm over it, you know."
Yeah, she's like, okay,
which helps.
So she pushes through everything so you don't feel like she's a victim. But I do mm-hmm. I do hate all the tropes that are going on here, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd be okay with Cordy taking her turn as the damsel in distress, as long as there are other times where she is the savior of the day. I'm fine if this trio, like, saves each other. That totally works for me, because, you know, everybody has times where they need to be the one that's, you know, picked up and saved. But yeah, it has been a little like, Angel is this amazing guy who swoops in and takes care of everyone. Like, mm-hmm. we can get away from that at some point here. That would be fine. We can have somebody right. save Angel a couple of times. I'm good with that. So,
yeah.
Other than that,
They did once. Remember when Spike got him? They saved him.
That's true. Yeah, for sure.
But, I mean, other than that, I did like this episode. It had a lot of really fun, ridiculous things, and, like, there, as you said before, there was a lot of fun character development too, like stuff that we may not have seen without it. So I have two sides to this episode. I love it, but I have a few misgivings about it. There's a few things I'm not entirely sure of.
Exactly. And again, and this is only for this part of the show. It's not like obviously speaking about the show in general, because you never know like how it's going to develop. But for right now, for season one, I will say that's one of the things holding me back from really enjoying Angel season one is this like repeated and like inverse of Buffy again, like Ariana said, like the fact that Xander is the most useless person on Buffy makes me really happy. Like, I love that he's so useless and he's the guy and he's the one that needs saving all the time. And I think that's really cool. And then in this episode, it is Cordelia and even Wesley, like who is in theory useless. He still actually has a lot of like skills that he can use in a fight that it would be nice to see Cordelia also have. But anyway, the first discussion point that we have here in the doc is Mitch's astute observation that sex is the ultimate evil of the Buffyverse.
It is. No good comes from having sex on Buffy.
But at least it's equal opportunity bad, it feels like.
And to its credit, like, Angel and Wesley don't sex or slut shame Cordelia when they find out she slept with Wilson Christopher. They're just very sympathetic and everything. They could have been like,
it's not her fault. How's she going to know he's a demon?
I would just say it would have been very easy to do that, and they didn't.
Yes, exactly. And that's again, like, Cordelia, even though she is a damsel, at least like she always has agency of her own story, and the narrative never sort of. I don't know. It's hard to say, but I think, like, Ariana, you hit a good point. Like, it's not, she doesn't feel like a damsel because she is sort of in charge of herself, and the show doesn't put her down in that sense, or at least the characters don't. But you know what? It's interesting, and I wanted to ask you, Caitlin, and this is like a very stupid question. Is this the first time that Cordelia, do we think, like, has had sex on the show? Because she didn't have sex with Xander, which sort of led you to think, like, oh, well, she's never. So now, I guess it just happened off screen. Is this the first time?
I'm pretty sure this is the first time. Because, because I remember I was watching this and I was like, oh my gosh, is this going to be like her first time? And she definitely seemed like she was really nervous about it.
Exactly. So that sort of adds an extra sort of ouch to this whole thing.
I'm like, geez, how traumatizing.
And that makes it even cooler how she is at the end, right? Like, how sort of she shakes it off and is like, well, I'm just going to keep going.
Yeah, I feel like they want you to think that she had at some point in high school, like, off screen with one of the many boys she was seeing. But I don't think
for most of her senior year.
Or, like, when we first met her, it seemed like she was seeing a different guy each week. And I feel like what I'm just saying, like, I feel like they maybe wanted you to initially think that she had, but her reactions make me feel like she hadn't.
Yeah, exactly, which is interesting, and a nice bit of sort of continuity in that sense. This is a weird question. Mitch asks, were the demon eggs that Angel and Wesley defeated related to the hacksaw demon? What's the hacksaw demon?
The big guy at the end, I think, is
I get it. No, I don't think so. I think that was just a random mission.
Yeah, I was at some point trying to, like, put that together, too, because not only was the creature they defeated an egg, but, like, Cordy is suddenly super pregnant, and I'm like, this has to be somehow involved, and then it ended up not really being at all. I was totally there. I thought that it wasn't, like, actually a baby. I thought, like, it was one of these stupid egg things that, yeah, I was all kinds of confused. But apparently they're completely unrelated.
Okay, yeah, I think so, too. And he also asks if the Wilson twist was obvious to anyone. It was obvious to me only because they kind of did the same thing on Buffy in that episode with the college fraternity party thing. You know, where the good guys actually like the worst.
Which one is Wilson?
He was Cordelia's guy, right? Or no? Oh, okay. Am I mixing them up? Yeah.
Was that a twist, though? I mean, I guess I felt like it wasn't a twist because Netflix spoils everything and there was like a giant picture of pregnant Cordelia. So I was like, oh, this guy's probably bad news.
And he's also really sleazy on Veronica Mars.
Oh, yes, yep. Yes. I was like, ah.
Who does he play? Vinny Down Low? Yeah.
Yes.
I couldn't see him as Wilson. He was Vinny. I was like, what is he doing?
And with the shooting range men served as a metaphor for the sleaziness of L.A., Mitch says. Do we have any comments? Yes, no, maybe? I guess?
I don't know.
Okay. I'm not sure that's a metaphor. They just were sleazy.
Yeah. And then, of course, there is this wonderful scene with Dennis, the ghost.
Oh.
Is it Dennis? Yeah, it's Phantom Dennis, who is one of the best characters you never see on Angel, where he's trying to protect her from Wilson. So clearly he knows that's something.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's even though funny.
He could also just be jealous.
I didn't think of that at all. I thought he was jealous.
Yeah.
So did I. I think he knew. I was kind of waiting for a scene where she, like at the end, like, where she's like, Dennis, next time, like, let me know. Like, I know you tried, but I'll believe you next time. If it's a good guy, you know, let it be. Like, I was totally expecting her to, like, have a conversation with Dennis and be like, thanks for looking out for me. You know, keep it up.
Right. Yeah. That would have been cool. That would have been a nice thing. But it was still really wonderful to see. Maybe he just watched Veronica Mars and that's why he knew. but it was still really wonderful to see and how he was comforting her the morning after and all that stuff. And another thing is that Angel and Wesley are sort of running around, like, playing investigators, and they all think that they're gay, and actually they're okay with that, because it, quote-unquote, adds to their mystery, which is weird, and Mitch wants us to call them Wangle.
I'm down for that.
Me too, actually. That works.
I love that Angel, like, lets Wesley throw an arm over his shoulder. Yes. Like...
It's so nice. It's so cool. It's so, like, opposite of hashtag no homo that it's, like, very nice, very funny, you know, very good.
And it's nice, too, because Angel is so, like, he is playing, like, the masculine archetype, but he isn't really. Like, he's very comfortable.
Yeah, within exactly.
himself.
Exactly, yeah. And if you're to believe, like, the mass conspiracy theories about Angel and Spike, then, you know, then it's okay anyway,
that's true.
Yeah. But it is very, I do like that aspect of it. And I like Wesley's in general too. Like, Wesley just defies all convention, but he's amazing. That thing with the axe in the wall is just, like, one of my favorites. he makes a little connection to Breaking Dawn when Cordy is pregnant and drinking blood, which is true. I didn't want to say it, but I'm glad somebody said it or read it. I'm reading it, but whatever. And, he has a question. If fire and decapitation couldn't kill the Hacksaw Demon, how come smashing it to pieces worked? By the same logic, wouldn't it be able to repair itself? I don't know. No.
It was the freezing that killed it. Mm-hmm. It had, you know, the breaking it to pieces was just Cordy being like, brah!
It was just symbolic, right? Like, right. It was her, like, symbolic victory.
Yeah. So, like, the freezing is what did it, and that totally seems plausible to me.
Yeah. And it was smart, too, and I loved how Wesley was, like, trying to distract it and stuff. Oh, that was pretty funny. I am Wesley, rogue demon hunter. Oh, oh, Wesley. I'm so glad he's here. Like, now does it make a little bit, because I know when Doyle died, I sort of made a few comments, like, about how, like, Doyle... It never felt like he had a lot of places to go. And I think now that we have Wesley in the mix, I think it just opens up so much more for their possibilities. And I was thinking, if this episode had played out with Doyle instead of Wesley, like, it would have been a million times worse.
Yeah.
You know, it just wouldn't have worked.
Well, also, he would have just been, like, super angry at her for having sex with someone who wasn't him.
That's also true. Mm-hmm. Also nice that that aspect is no longer there, no. I will say.
I mean, Doyle was fine, but I definitely think Wesley fits in a lot better with these two, like, in terms of their weird world and their weird chemistry. They're both so weird. And so it's nice that Wesley's weird, too.
Exactly, like having a show like Angel and having it be, you know, the Dark Avengers saving all the damsels and stuff. You need someone, like, you can't play it too straight. And I think that's like they desperately need a character like Wesley, especially for episodes like this, which otherwise would have been horrible.
Yeah, which is like my problem with Kate, which I don't hate Kate. I don't hate her. She's fine.
I hate her. Sorry.
She's fine.
I don't.
She's fine. I just, I know Caitlin likes her, but I feel like she's, like, too normal, like, for this. Like, she doesn't fit in with them. I want weirder people, because they are trying to play it, so that first they were trying to play it really straight, and it was like, no, I want it more fun, and now it's fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a reason why people, like, characters like Spike and Cordelia and stuff, like, they are the people that fans sort of connect themselves to, because they fit into this kind of world better and they make the reality of it work. Like, their weirdness fits the weirdness of the world in a way. When you add someone in like Doyle or Kate or whatever, you're kind of like, you don't belong here. Like, it's weird. It is weird. I agree for sure. And it's great, by the way. Like, I know that people on Twitter too have sort of come after me for my dislike of Kate, and I'm sorry. But it probably does have something to do with that. She's just, she belongs on CSI, and this is not CSI. That's probably how I feel about it.
Well, and she's not around enough to truly, like, be attached to her. Like, if she was around every episode, if we checked in with her more often, I feel like I'd have a bigger attachment to her, because she seems like an interesting character, and the dynamic between her and Angel is really, it could be really interesting, but we don't get enough of her to make me care. Like, that's more or less my problem.
Yeah. And who knows, maybe we'll get that in the future, and then we can sort of reassess, you know. But for definitely. Now, for sure, that's definitely I agree with that. Pretty much that's everything for this episode, unless there was anything else that isn't covered by favorite scenes that you guys wanted to bring up. No, I guess not. There's not really that much to it, other than, again, the trio is coming together and we're seeing them bond, and I guess, in that sense, like, having Cordelia be the damsel allowed Wesley to be with Angel and to build up that relationship. So in that sense, it worked for them. Moving into favorite scenes, I don't actually have one for this one. I was like trying to think of it, but I'm not.
It's okay, because you have the best line. So we forget.
That's true. I guess if anything, my favorite scene is the final one where Cordelia is thanking Wesley and Angel for saving her, and they have that cute little moment together. And Caitlin, what was yours?
So we touched on this, but just Phantom Dennis being the best roommate. Like, he was looking out for Cordelia before she hooked up, and after, he was just there to comfort her and was so sweet, giving her the tissue and pulling the blankets up. Like, he's just, he's so cute. We never see him, and he is adorable.
And Ariana?
My favorite scene, well, like, yours kind of ties into it, but I think even more so when she finds out she's pregnant, and she's in bed, and she's, like, so sad and so scared, and Angel and Wesley come in, and she, like, does not want them to see her, but they're totally non-judgmental, and they're just comforting her, and she just seems so young in this episode, and they were so, like, such, like, good big brothers, and it just, like, made me so happy, and so I really loved how they comforted her, and how they were trying to take care of her, and how they came together as a family.
Me too.
She's so heartbreaking in that scene, because she's like Adam, and she's like, it was so safe, and just broke my heart.
That scene is actually very, very, very good. I'm for all it is. It's that was wonderful. And I guess I should have said that for last, but we'll just, Kristen, what's your favorite scene? We'll go back.
Mine is definitely Cordy drinking the blood out of Angel's fridge and him being like, absolutely disgusted by it. Like, that is way grosser than, yeah. It's just one of those moments that you're so glad it's there because we see how gross it is. And for Angel to kind of get a glimpse of it, it's just great. I also really loved the line at the beginning between, like, when Angel and Wesley go to defeat the egg monster guy, and Angel just starts, like, covering it up with termites. Like, he's like, yeah, we'll slay those termites or something. That whole little bit was really funny, too. So that's also kind of my other favorite scene.
Except, like, you would never just sit there. If someone, like, broke into your apartment, you wouldn't be like, oh, that again. Like,
yeah. Unless it happens a lot. I mean, I don't live in L.A.
Well, yeah, possibly. those termite distinguishers, whatever, I can't speak. So moving into favorite lines, we're just going to run back to that scene and the trio friendship that's coming together when they burst in and someone goes like, so you're the boyfriend, and Angel goes, no, I'm family. Aww. And there's your tag, like, there is your show. That's the Angel that we love. It's that, and it's wonderful to see the birth of the, no pun intended, something was born this episode. And again, and I think that's another thing with Doyle. Like, again, it's weird because not that I love Doyle, and I was devastated when he died, but he wasn't this. He wasn't part of this. And removing that sort of will they, won't they kind of thing from it that is kind of very overplayed with Doyle and Cordelia, and adding in Wesley instead and allowing the three of them to build up this genuine family connection. Like, they are all they've got, and they trust and love each other and on this thing, which is kind of like what you have on Buffy, but this is a very separate, like, it's not a repeat of that. It's a very separate thing under very different circumstances with characters that for different reasons are more adult, if you will, you know, and are living more adult lives. And I love it. I love all of that stuff. I love that they are family in that way. It's one of my favorite things about Angel, the show. Yay! Wonderful. What else? Caitlin, what is your favorite line?
So mine comes when Angel...
Oh, we should do this like as a scene, Caitlin.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Who you guys want to be?
I'll be Angel.
Okay. I'll be Wilson Christopher. You shouldn't sneak up on people like that in here. That's how accidents happen.
Speaking of accidents, I'm a friend of Cordelia Chase.
This is a private club. Featured word, private.
Hey, you don't talk to me, I'll kick your ass. Featured word, ass.
Amazing.
It's just one of those, like, he's trying to be really intense, but it's like, that's such a stupid line. <I know. laughs>
Isn't that just like Angel in a nutshell, though? He, like, thinks he's so tough and cool, and he's a big dork.
Yes.
And I also love the, speaking of accidents, I'm a friend of Cordelia Chase.
That's true, too. That's funny. And Ariana?
So mine is at the beginning when the girls come in and they're taking Cordelia out to go meet her, like, her boyfriend or whatever. And Angel goes, you're seeing someone? How come I haven't met him yet? And she goes, because I'm ashamed of you.
Yes. Great. And great. He's so overprotective and she's just so frank and upfront about it. I love it. And Kristen?
Mine is from Wesley as he becomes, you know, fully embraces Wesley, Rogue Demon Hunter, and he's facing down the demon and says, as a point of courtesy, I like to get to know my opponents before I engage them in mortal combat. Do you have any hobbies? Like, just, oh, he is Wesley. Magnificent. I love
he
him.
Is magnificent is the perfect word. Yes, Wesley is truly magnificent. And that brings us to the end of the episode discussion. I have a newfound appreciation for expecting after this discussion, actually. I was sure that I was going to just hate it forever, but no, And we'll see what the listeners think and what else we have to talk about in listener feedback. But before we do that, just want to remind you of the contact information again. If you want to email us, you can do that rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at re_watchable. You can find this post on hyperbole.com. And you can find us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And on iTunes, we want you to rate us 5 stars. And if you do, then Ariana will make you waffles so you can put little things in the holes if you want to. Which is the best incentive we've had yet.
Like, naughty than I think it was supposed to.
I don't know. Sex it is bad. Come on, guys.
Yeah. Well, rate us 5 stars then. That is a good. And in listener feedback, actually, and I'm going to give it over to Ariana here because we have some interesting stuff that's happened on Twitter, like a big deal, guys, that we cannot wait to tell you about.
Brittany's
so go for it.
Very important poll. The important poll that Brittany put out about who has the best forearms, which, funnily enough, I did not know what forearms were until this poll. But they are from your elbow to your wrist, people. And sometimes they are very sexy. And so, according to our listeners, the final results for who has the best forearms, in a tie for 9% each, Wesley and Buffy.
Yay!
In a tie for 14%, Angel and Spike. Ooh, their rivalry continues.
Oh, I know.
In second place, Riley was 17%.
Cannot believe that he won.
He does. Like, over the two. He gives good forearm.
I guess.
And our grand champion, of course, Giles with 37% of the vote.
Woo!
Giles wins all the polls.
I love that Xander is not even on here. But to be fair, I mean, in season 3, maybe I would have considered, but right now he's just kind of a blonde. Like, you don't see his forearms. How would you know? Giles.
Anya likes his forearms.
That's true. Giles is a very deserving champion. I did vote Buffy, but I will say Giles is probably the clear winner. He has very sexy forearms.
I had never really looked at his forearms, but then I did afterward, and you're right. They are very nice.
Yes. The people have spoken, and they spoke correctly. Except for the Riley thing, whatever. That was so much fun. I can't wait to see what Brittany comes up with next time. She set the bar very high. Is it going to be elbows next? That's going to be interesting. And we have some comments as well that wasn't just about forearms. So Caitlin and Kristen and Ariana, if you get those, and I'll get the last one.
All right, so Stephanie Merrill tweeted us and said, the moment in A New Man when Giles purposely terrifies Professor Walsh gives me life. Hashtag payback. Hashtag no father figure my ass.
That's right.
That was my favorite scene, so I agree.
Yeah. Most definitely.
Yeah. Next up, we have Maria Lovegood, who said, I love seeing Vinny Van Lo from V-Mars. He will always be Vinny to me, and I can never trust him on screen. He does have a very sleazy look to him.
Yeah, so true. Shauna Evans at NickLove128 says, uh-oh, you have butt face. Maybe the funniest line ever.
Yes. I think it is. Someone else tweeted me that. It was Emmy Foss tweeted me and said that it was her favorite Buffy line of all time. So this is a clear favorite, which is amazing. And Mandy Kay reacted to a tweet that we sent out last week about the episode with baby Jeremy Renner, saying, I'm so amused that we all independently call him baby Jeremy Renner. Which is kind of funny. And we have a final comment from House of Black. Kristen, do you want to get that one?
Sure, yes. House of Black says, do you think that we are supposed to draw a comparison between the Initiative's treatment of demons and the demon Nazi's behavior from Angel the Scourged? Those episodes came very close to one another, and Doomed makes a big statement about the Initiative regarding demons as animals. Keep up the great podcast.
Oh, interesting.
Ooh, how philosophical.
That is interesting. I don't think so, just because, like, demons in general are inherently evil. Like, the Initiative's intent is to protect innocents from demons killing them, but then from there, sort of blanketly treating all demons as evil and not understanding the nuance, I think, there might be something to that. But I don't think it was intentional. What do you guys think?
I mean, the initiative so far, I don't think they've come across a demon that wasn't causing trouble. Like,
yeah.
The initiative is centered on this college campus, and the only demons they've really come across are ones that have attacked people. So I don't know how I would react to them meeting, like, that peaceful demon race. Like, if they met them and treated them just as badly, I would probably be pissed at the initiative. But I don't know, I don't know if they would have a different reaction if it was a peaceful race, or if just because of where they're at, it's conditioned them to see demons as, you know, always bad.
Yeah, because the initiative, like, from what we know, like, they're here to protect people, you know? Like, they're sort of their defense, they're not attack. Maybe? I don't know. I don't know if that's fair to say, but it is an interesting observation.
But at the same time, both groups are looking at demons, and the Scourge was just looking at, like, half-bloods, but they're both looking at demons as being less than them, animals or not pure-bloods sort of thing, so that's interesting.
Yeah, for sure, and that's why I'm just going with, like, the initiative's base instinct is, or base, like, thing is to save innocent people, when that's the difference from death.
So neither, but neither see nuance, which is interesting.
Very, very interesting. Very, very good comment. And we're going to wrap up today with Ariana's answers, where Kristen's. Have you guys thought a word for Kristen yet? Like, Kristen's crackpot theories.
We had one last week. I forget what it is.
Kristen's.
Kristen's crackpot theories.
Kristen's crackpot theories and Ariana's answers for the next two episodes, which are Buffy 413, The Iron Team, and Angel 113, She.
Okay, so in The Iron Team, obviously Buffy is going to go off on her own because she feels like she is putting her friends in too much danger now that Giles has turned into a demon. And, take it away, Kristen.
I'm assuming that something happens that makes one of them, like, I want to say, like, some demon or something, some spell goes wrong or something, and it makes one of them think that they are, like, the sole person, like, not Slayer, but, like, the sole person in between them and the world. Like, someone gets an inflated sense of self and has to, like, be brought back to the real world.
Oh my gosh, wow. Kristen, what if Buffy, like, loses her powers? And then they have to actually work as a team, but Buffy is, like, being grumpy because she's like, no, I'm the Slayer. And they're like, but you're useless, that, Buffy.
I could see that. That would definitely work.
Okay. As for She, it's definitely going to be a demon comes and he, like, turns Angel into a woman, and he's a beautiful woman. but he's having, like, a little bit of anxiety. I mean, because then he starts, like, liking it a lot, and he's like, maybe I do, like, relate better to my feminine side. Yeah, him and Cordelia, they, like, braid each other's hair.
That is way better than anything I could have come up with. I was just going to say, there's definitely somebody coming who does not have a name, and they refer to this person as She, and that is it. That is literally all I could come up with.
Cool. Cool. Thank you for those predictions. We will find out next week if Buffy loses her powers and Angel turns into a woman. Maybe it's a crossover episode and it happens at the same time. That would be amazing. but until we'll hold the suspense for next week and we'll figure it out. So we hope you liked this episode. Please write in with your feedback and keep it spoiler free. Until next time, my name is Selena.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Ariana.
And I'm Kristen.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.